Our show is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and other devices with Stitcher. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
The First United Methodist Church podcast is recorded live every week at 4832 Tahunga Avenue in North Hollywood, California. Thank you for downloading.
I'll be reading from the Good News Bible. Psalm 24. The world and all that is in it belongs to the Lord. The earth and all who live on it are His. He built it on the deep waters beneath the earth and laid its foundations in the ocean depths. Who has the right to go up the Lord's hill? Who may enter His holy temple? Those who are pure in act and thought, who do not worship idols or make false promises, the Lord will bless them and save them. God will declare them innocent. Such are the people who come to God, who come into the presence of the God of Jacob. Fling wide the gates, open the ancient doors, and the great King will open in. Who is this great King? He is the Lord strong and mighty, the Lord victorious in battle. Fling wide the gates, open the ancient doors, and the great King will come out. Will come in. Who is the great King? The triumphant Lord. He is the great great King.
Pray with me, if you will. Come, Holy Spirit, come. Come with the fire and burn. Come with the rain and cleanse. Come with the wind and breathe. Come with the light and reveal. Convict us, convert us, consecrate us. Claim and call us with your care and concern, O God, until we do something. Scholars tell us, by way of historiographic and sociological background, this text was used specifically for worship. The first two verses are a hymnic saying of what is important in terms of faith tradition, literally sung. The rest of it may or may not have been sung, but it's clear that verses 3 through 6 are what is called a Torah liturgy. In this case, literally relating to what it means to enter into the presence of God. Hence those words, only those with clean hands and pure hearts may come before God. The next several verses are what is called a gate liturgy. Lest you become thinking that you don't do this, you do this virtually every Sunday. You experience a gate liturgy. That's what the call to worship is. It's call and response, or question and answer kinds of statements. The importance of liturgy is the work of the people. It's to keep us engaged rather than worship being something done to us. It's a participatory element where we are engaged in mind, body, and spirit in the process. Specifically, Methodists are known as the singing Protestants. We like to sing. Some say too much, and some say not well enough, but we sing. That's what we do. And I was reminded of that when we were singing Fanny Crosby hymn. She wrote as many hymns as anybody in our hymnal, and I don't think she wrote a bad one. And I know that Charles Wesley was a lovely founder of our tradition, along with his brother John, and about half of his hymns we can sing, maybe less. I'd even say maybe 25%, and only because somebody else wrote the music. But Fanny Crosby was smart enough to write and choose people to write the music for her work. So that, too, is liturgic. It's important for us to understand that the earth is not ours to use, it's ours to treasure. as stewards. And that's part and parcel the message here, and part and parcel the message of both the Psalm and the 2 Samuel text, where David is bringing the ark into Jerusalem to dedicate. It's about relationship with God and understanding. Now, David was criticized because he came as he brought the ark and danced before the Lord with great fervor. Some thought it was too open, too lustful, too whatever they thought then and now. The idea of both the texts is, how do we come before God? Where are we centered in our earth? And do we think we own this planet? Now, some would say we have the right, because it has to do with dominion. I'm reminded of Marion Barley, a longtime member of this parish. I'm not even sure whether she is still with us, but she, when I came, I have this vivid remembrance of her coming to my office my first Monday as pastor of this parish. And she came in ranting and railing about what needed to happen in this church in terms of evangelism, in terms of social justice. And she said things like, you know, this church was marginalized in the 60s by the district. It needs to grow, and it needs to have more active youth. And she listed this litany, and I have boxes of my books just stacked around me. And finally, I said, would you have a seat? And she sat down, and I said, would you tell me your name? She told me her name, Marion Barley. And I said, Mrs. Barley, as part of her liturgy, she said, I'm 64 years old, and I don't know how much more time I have. And that meant something then. It means nothing 20 years removed, 23 years removed. She said, I don't know how much time I have left. And I said, well, Mrs. Barley, I have a doctorate, and it happens to have a focus in evangelism. But I don't know where the post office is or where the best supermarket is. If this community is to grow and to be vital, it's because of you and the people I serve. That's how this worshiping community will be effective. And she said, but you have to understand, you know, so many people think they know something about this. And she brought up, almost in every conversation, I would say, she talked about dominion does not mean dominance. We don't get to dominate the earth or abuse her. And I still remember that vividly, 23 years removed, that dominion does not mean dominance. And I think it's an accurate statement. Related to this is a comment by Rabbi Joshua Heschel, where he says, man does not own the earth. It belongs to the Lord. It is not a derelict. I love that line. The earth is not a derelict. And then he closes with, what we own, we owe. Meaning all we have and all we are about ultimately belongs to God, if we are people of faith. What I didn't realize until I decided to reuse part of that quote, which I have used before, was that it was 20 years after his death that Rabbi Dreschner put his words in book form. 20 years removed, almost now 40 years removed. Maybe it is 40 years. Yeah, it is 40 years removed. Since he uttered those words, I don't think they're less true today. I think they're, if anything, more true. What we own, we owe. But we forget. We see somebody who wants to mine this or extract that, and we think, well, we need that stuff, so let's do it. But we don't think about the consequences always. We think about the economic consequences, but not about the consequences to this beautiful land in which we live often. Probably about this same time, Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel uttered these words, right in that era, I was working for my father. He was a shell dealer. This is when dinosaurs roamed the earth and people actually came out and washed your window and pumped your gas. Some of you remember this. I know many of you do not. But my dad and the pump island had a little air hose and it dinged inside, so you came out to greet your customers. And at that time, you did this because they could pump gas and leave. The pumps were not protected the way they are now. So my dad happened to be the first one on the island, and just as he reached the customer, the man removed his ashtray from his car and dumped it on the pump island, which in my dad's establishment was clean. My father, without thinking, or maybe it was thinking, it was intentional, he reached down, scooped up everything, and threw it in the man's car. And the guy said, hey, and he said, hey, this is my establishment. I pay people to clean this, and there's a trash can right there. I still can vividly see my father doing this. He was a man built about like me, bigger in the shoulders, stronger from wrist to shoulder than I, bigger hands, not an imposing physical specimen, but specifically imposing in terms of the intellect that he proposed. That 44 years later, I remember it as if it was yesterday. Which is to say, what I learned, what little I know and represent in terms of my view of ecology, I learned from my parents. Don't throw that gum on the ground. Somebody's going to step in it. Pick up that paper. Those kinds of things. Always leave a restroom cleaner than when you went in. And I'm sure some of you resonate with this. There are places I won't use a restroom because of the ecology involved or lack of it. Part of this text, I think the largest part, invites us to consider how we respond to God. Do we want to be in charge? I know most of the time I do. I don't want to take God's direction. I want to be close to God, but as an advisor. I want to tell God what to do. Here's what you need to do with this one, God. Here's what you need to do with that one. Eliminate this. Create that. Reality is, if we are faithful, we come to God with clean hands and a pure heart. That means we don't have answers. That this earth is not ours. It belongs to the Lord. That what we own, we owe. If not literally, and I believe it is literally, but if not literally, certainly figuratively. We have a responsibility as stewards of this dominion. To care about the earth in which we live, care about the people we relate to, and not to act as if we own things, or worse, people. Unless you've been in a cave for the last 3 or 4 months, you know about what's been going on at Penn State, and Louis Freeh, former director of the FBI, came forth with a report that was scathing, to say the least. I've read almost everything I can get my hands on in print. And the thing I hoped for was that Joe Paterno would be spared in this, and he was not. And I don't know who I'm quoting here, but the quote is, all that is necessary for evil to succeed is for good people to do nothing. And there was a time when I was younger, I knew that quote and its attribution. Somebody with a a smartphone will tell me on the way down, out the door, which is wonderful. This is what I love about technology. The fact being that Joe Paterno knew and did not do everything necessary to protect those children. Now, here's the worst part for me, because this ties to the very core of fear-based thinking. In Mr. Free's report, it states that 10 years ago, two janitors witnessed Mr. Sandusky molesting two young boys in the shower. And they said nothing at the time because they feared that they would lose their jobs, because nobody would believe them because of the people in power and the authority they had. That's tragic. I'd like to think that if one of those janitors, I would have been strong enough to step forward. I'd be a liar if I said I knew definitively. None of us knows unless we're standing in that spot. But we know this much. We need to be honest with how we abuse, misuse, and mangle lives by the overuse of power. We use the words me and mine, and we ought to be thinking about ours. We talk about my authority, my power. What ought to be done is what I think, and don't take enough counsel. It's between Joe Paterno and God. I don't wish him hell or heaven. I wish his family whatever peace they can. What troubles me is an institution that he gave nearly 50 years of his life to may never recover from what wasn't done. This world is not of our creation. It is our responsibility to understand that God can and will lead us. May it ever be so. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the North Hollywood First United Methodist Church Sermon Podcast, delivered by Dr. Joey McDonald. For more information, please check out nohomethodistchurch.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter under NoHoFUMC.